So in a case like that, you write all your data processing code within Lambda, and Lambda has multiple triggers. Like there is an event trigger, you could trigger it like once in a week or once in an hour based on the event. Or else you could also put an S3 trigger to a Lambda saying that whenever a file comes into this S3 bucket, immediately go ahead and process it.
Hi, welcome back to all our listeners to our channel on Talking AWS for Data Science. So every week, me along with Kali are here going to talk about various AWS services that can spearhead your data science journey. So Kali, what do you think we should talk about this week?
So for any listeners who are joining this week, please note that last week we talked about AWS Athena for Data Science. And this week, I think we should talk about another AWS services. It's got a weird name, right? AWS Lambda.
Oh, yeah. I think all these AWS services have weird names. So last time it was Athena and this time it is Lambda. Lambda, I guess, comes from a mathematical symbol, right? A Greek mathematical symbol, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I don't know on what basis do AWS starts naming their services. I'm just wondering one day when they start using these Indian names for an AWS service, like something like Guru or something like Veda or Vega. That'll be fun, actually.
Yeah, let's wait and see which service comes up with these names.
Yeah. So let's jump straight in. So what do you think? Like, okay, for our viewers who are new to AWS or new to Lambda as a service, so what is Lambda?
Well, as far as I understand what Lambda is, it's a microservice which AWS is providing. So when we talk about microservice, it is you could actually start, you know, dividing your piece of code into small chunks and then have each piece of code run independently. So for instance, maybe I can think of maybe when you're developing a web page or so. So if you have some content where you need to develop the login page, where you need to develop the, you know, the course, the content page, and then you're developing a payment page. So ideally, in a traditional scenario, you put all of them into a Docker, and then the Docker has to have the maximum capacity to manage each of these services which you want to give the end user. But with this microservice, you break it up into three parts and each of them works independently. And that's where I see there's a lot of advantage using Lambda. And I also think there's an advantage because I think it is serverless. What do you say?
Yeah, correct. I mean, in terms of microservices, completely agree. And also one major advantage that I see with Lambda is being serverless. Because I have built application which dealt with hosting a web application, as the example that you mentioned. Okay. So I have hosted an actual Windows server in the old traditional days. And recently, yes, I've hosted Docker. And then it's pain, right? Because you need to manage the server. If something goes wrong, you'll need to debug. Again, it's not very easy to debug a Docker instance. So that's where I think I love what Lambda has to offer, because you write the code and just forget it, because who is going to host it, how it's going to work, I think AWS is going to manage. So I love the serverless aspect of Lambda.
But I think there are a few limitations also. Maybe let's talk from a data science perspective. So if we are talking about a data science problem, the first thing that comes to the mind is data processing. So when we are doing data processing, and especially when I'm talking about big data, like streaming data which is coming in, do you really think this Lambda microservice will help us?
On data processing, yes, majorly. I think data processing will be a huge advantage. I'll talk about one example. Whenever your data is coming into S3, right? A lot of data science projects would like to process the data the moment they come into S3. So in a case like that, you write all your data processing code within Lambda, and Lambda has multiple triggers. Like there is an event trigger, you could trigger it like once in a week or once in an hour based on the event. Or else you could also put an S3 trigger to a Lambda saying that whenever a file comes into this S3 bucket, immediately go ahead and process it. So that way you are like completely writing your data processing code, which runs on a serverless manner. And you are sure that every time an S3 bucket is modified, your code runs in the background.
Wow, that's a wonderful functionality. But I actually faced one kind of a problem when I was doing this. So I had a trigger where in fact, that was an S3 trigger, Kali, as you mentioned. But what happened was my data was so huge. So I always encountered a timeout error. So I think there is something called as a timeout. So Lambda doesn't function for infinite amount of time, right? So if I'm not mistaken, right now it is around 5 minutes, I guess. But any processing which goes beyond five minutes, Lambda fails. So that means your entire code, the process, the pipeline itself fails. So do you think we have some kind of a solution for this, or a turnaround where, you know, you don't lose your pipeline?
See, the default timeout for Lambda is 3 minutes, and it can go until 15 minutes. That's on a far stretch. But I agree. I mean, let's say you have a billion rows of data, and then your Lambda wouldn't work because it won't sustain until those 15 minutes, because sometimes your data processing takes around 30 or 40 minutes. So in those cases, what you could do is you could use orchestration, because orchestration is trying to run your multiple microservices in a flow or on a directional chart kind of a way. So what you could do is you could use step functions. Step functions is an AWS service. It can help orchestrate different Lambda functions, and it can also pass a state between multiple Lambda. So you've got your data processing, let's say 1 million rows. So you could divide them into 100,000 in each batch, and then you could run one after the other by using multiple instances of the same Lambda.
Oh, that's a nice thing. So what you're saying is, first of all, you're using a microservice to get chunks of code, and within the microservice again you're using step functions to still actually make the process into pieces and have a smooth flow of the entire pipeline. That's really nice.
Let's talk about a manual way of triggering a Lambda function, right? So because it is serverless, so is there a way you could make a REST API out of Lambda?
Yeah, definitely. Lambda actually supports a lot of services. One of them is you could trigger Lambda by using API gateway. So in that way, you could either make your REST API or a HTTP API.
So that means if I'm building a React-based website, or if I'm building a mobile application, for example, I'm doing a mobile application which needs data science, right? So I can't run data science products on a mobile application because of some memory limitations. So I could put my data science code into Lambda and then connect an API gateway to it.
Exactly.
And then call the API gateway from my mobile applications.
Right.
So that's one great use case, right? To use data science from a mobile app.
Yeah.
Okay, that's terrific. See, typically when I'm writing code, let's say Lambda can use code from Node.js or Python, right? So when I'm writing Python code locally, it is fine because I could install libraries. But how does the whole thing work on Lambda?
Yeah, that's a good question, Kali, because when we are talking about our data science codes, the first thing what we need to do is import different libraries, and only then we start running the code. So now the question is, we are talking about serverless Lambda function. So where do I go and install it? So there's again a way to do this. What you could do is directly create a virtual environment on your local machine, download all the dependencies of your code, zip it up, and there is an option where you can upload your zip file on Lambda. So in this way, once the Lambda is triggered, the code, whenever it sees import some kind of a library, it has all its dependencies in the zip file itself. So that's how you would deploy your code there.
Yeah, see, that would work as long as you're building simple apps, right? For example, now think, I want to use a YOLO model.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge, right? Because Lambda has a 50 megabytes limitation for a zip file.
True.
So what do you think we should do for a data science perspective?
Absolutely. So even if you see any kind of a data science problem, a minimum what you use, like even for an NLP problem or a computer vision problem, like you said, I think minimum of imports will go up to 1 GB. So in this case, what I would suggest is you could create a Docker and then put your Docker in the ECR. ECR is a registry for Dockers provided by AWS. So once you apply upload your Docker in the ECR registry, you could trigger the ECR, you or the image, whatever is created in the ECR, can be triggered by Lambda. So this is a beautiful function. So ideally, you're not putting your code on Lambda directly or in the form of a zip file, but you're just triggering your Lambda function and you're triggering the image which is there in the ECR, which would run your code eventually.
That'll be terrific, right? Because from what I know, it's suppose until 10 gigabytes is what you could build an image for. So that'll be a great option in which majority of the data science applications can be built using Lambda. So that's good information on data science. I mean, we spoke about various aspects. Now let's talk about model building and ML model deployment, right? So can Lambda be used in this scenario?
So if you're talking about model building using from scratch, like if you're talking about deep learning models, which would take a good amount of time, which is more than a minimum of 10 to 15 minutes and then go on till 40, 45 minutes, then my answer would straight away be no. I think Lambda is not the right way to do it. But think about transfer learning, because most of our models are these days, we don't build them from scratch. We do transfer learning. So for NLP, for instance, we are borrowing models which are already built, like BERT or distally BERT, anything. Okay, so in that case where the model training takes hardly a couple of minutes based on your training data, yes, in such scenarios Lambda will be useful.
Terrific. And how about inferencing of machine learning models?
Yeah, that is a very nice point, Kali. I think when we are talking about deployment, right? So you have a model, saved in your repository, and then you want to use the model, say, to predict something. So inference SageMaker, this is a service provided by SageMaker, actually. So you can create an inference point or an endpoint there. And what you do is you link this inference point directly to Lambda. So once this Lambda function is triggered, it goes, the inference point is triggered, and then it goes to the model library, which is sitting in your S3 bucket, and then predicts what it has to do or predicts or whatever, and then gets back the result.
Awesome. That's a lot of information on Lambda. I think let's kind of end it with a point on the costing. So Lambda, the costing of Lambda is very minimal, but again, it depends on the number of times that you trigger the Lambda service and the time that each Lambda execution takes. So these are the two parameters on which AWS charges people on the Lambda. But right now, yeah, the costing is too bare minimal to think about. So, all right. So that's a good load of information for our data scientists. So just keep those questions coming in. You could write to us or you could comment on the podcast window. And then we could take up your questions and then some suggestions on any service that you would like us to review. Just keep that feedback coming. So until then, this is Kali.
This is Deepthi signing off for today.